This piece was brought to you by Whole Foods Market, wholefoodsmarket.com. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Business.
Thank you for calling the National Bison Association.
Good morning, this is Dave.
That's Dave Carter, Executive Director of the NBA, the National Bison Association. The NBA is a resource for ranchers and an advocate for bison, working to preserve, promote, and to market bison as a sustainable industry. Bison, the American bison, sometimes called the American buffalo, once prominent in headcount, body size, and cultural significance, have all but disappeared from North America. With the help of the NBA, populations are growing. I had to ask, what is the difference between a bison and a buffalo?
I'm chuckling because that is a very common question. The technical answer is that the animals that are out there are bison. The scientific name is bison. And technically, if you talk about buffalo, you're describing a water buffalo. Now, in reality, we've been calling these critters buffalo in this part of the world for 400 years.
400 years ago, estimates place historic buffalo populations around 50 million head. 50 million. By 120 years ago, the American bison had been hunted down, driven to near extinction during the settling of the prairies. From 50 million to roughly 1,000. A desperate fraction of a percent of the populations before European colonization of the Americas.
120 years ago, there were less than 700 animals left alive. And there were five ranchers that essentially gathered up the remnants of the herd and saved them from extinction. You know, people talk about the Bronx Zoo and the animals that were in Yellowstone and everything, but it was really Charles Goodnight and Scotty Walking Phillips and the Pablo Allard group, you know, folks like that, that gathered up the remnants and saved them. And at least three of those ranchers experimented with crossing bison with cattle to create what they wanted to call cattle-o. And what they found was that, first of all, the first generation bull that came out of that cross was sterile, which meant that it didn't do you any good. And the females that came out of that cross had calving problems and a bad attitude. So they quit doing it. But because of that, there were some cattle genetics that were introduced into another bison. And the geneticist will tell you that of the bison that are out there that have some cattle genetics in them, it's generally less than 1.5% of their genetic makeup. And it's a result of some things that happened 120 years ago as opposed to something that happened 5 years ago.
One might say bison are the keepers of the plains. The bison's diet consists of native grasses, maintained by the slight disturbance of the bison's cup-shaped hoof. In their heyday, no pun intended, two subspecies of bison, the plains bison and the wood bison, graze from Alaska south into Mexico and out toward the eastern seaboard of the United States. Bison were so incomprehensibly plentiful. Millions upon millions of hooves of migrating herds of bison laid the track for what is now Highway US 150. Year after year, they wore one path, which crossed the Ohio River, running northwest to the Wabash and into present-day Illinois.
First of all, you know, we think that bison are a keystone of this ecosystem. We live in a part of the world that evolved through thousands of years of bison interacting with the environment. So the species of grass that are out there, the wildlife, the birds, you know, all of those things, and even the contour of the land reflects the hoofprint of the bison. If I fly a small plane, and it's interesting when you fly over the prairies and you see these prairie potholes, these small, you know, lakes or ponds that are out across the prairies. A lot of those prairie potholes were formed through hundreds or thousands of years of buffalo wallowing in the dirt and kind of excavating it out and creating a catchment. Well, then when you create the prairie pothole, then you've got a ecosystem that brings in the birds and the predators and, you know, all of those things. So we feel that this is the animal that belongs in this part of the world. One of the things that we try and promote is that with bison, the less that we tinker with the animal, the better. There are some ranchers that are doing some DNA testing of their animals, and what they're finding is the animals that don't have the indications of cattle mitochondria DNA perform better than the ones that do have that genetic. And so there's actually, you know, work going on a number of ranches to DNA test their animals and to slowly start to weed out animals that might have a higher level of cattle integration. That's not really a focus of the SARE grant, but as we talk to producers about what we want the animal to be and the business to look like and to make sure that you've got animals that interact with the land, I think that will definitely be part of the conversation.
Back when bison were on the verge of extinction, some cattle genetics were bred into bison, though the traits imparted by cattle genetics were ultimately found by ranchers to be unfavorable in the bison's makeup, which had adapted to endure winter storms, hot summers, resource demands of large herds, and predator and prey balances in the prairies. The NBA's Code of Ethics now prohibits crossbreeding with cattle.
One of the reasons that bison meat is more expensive than the grocery store is it does cost more to raise the animal. And the only reason that the cattle industry uses growth hormones in their animals is that speeds the process to get that animal from birth to slaughter, to the point that cattle generally go to slaughter between 14 and 17 months of age. In bison, where we don't use growth hormones, and in fact it's illegal to use growth hormones in bison, our animals generally go to slaughter at about 24 to 30 months of age. And so, you know, as a rancher, you look at that and you go, okay, I've got 10 to 12 more months that I've got to pay the mortgage and, you know, buy hay and those type of things to feed this animal. So that is more expensive. The thing, though, that we focus on, and what we call the bison advantage, are several factors. Number one, this is a low-maintenance animal. So it's not an animal that you have to be out there managing all the time. Even as we grow the business, we are committed to always staying a niche product. You know, to put it in comparison, the bison, we processed about 60,000 animals under USDA or state-inspected facilities all of last year. The beef industry does 120,000 animals every single day. And we sat down as the association a few years back and made a decision that we don't want to go down that path, because the more that we turn bison into just a commodity, then there starts to be the pressure of building the rump on the animal so you can pack more meat on the frame, or maybe we got a petition to be able to use growth hormones so we can speed the production and, you know, all of those things. And those are paths that we don't want to go down. We know that our customers are buying bison not only because it tastes great and because it's healthy, but because they love the animal the way it is. And from our standpoint, we think Mother Nature did a really good job of developing the animal, so let's not screw it up.
To learn more about bison, visit bisoncentral.com. This is Laura Del Campo reporting for heritageradionetwork.org, coming to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.